South Korean officials say that the force of the blast set off an artificial earthquake of a magnitude of 5.3.
The North Koreans announced that it managed to detonate a nuclear warhead in the test and says it now has the ability to mount these warheads onto rockets.
The complaint against Wells Fargo filed by the city of Los Angeles alleges that bank employees opened the new accounts in order to meet sales quotas. The employees allegedly transferred money from customers' authorized accounts to pay fees on the unauthorized ones.
Wells Fargo released a statement saying it will vigorously defend itself from this lawsuit.
Are you worried that London will stop being one of the financial capitals of the world?
No, not at all. I mean, I think London has got, It's got great labor laws, it's a great place to live. Trying to unwind all of that, I think, is a pretty tall order.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:10 and it is Friday. It is September 9th, 2016. Good morning. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell and welcome to another business day. I think the shortened week, the 4-week work week, does good for me. I think I like that. It was over fast. I think maybe we should do this every week. Any chance we can get this moving? Maybe we could start a movement to have some protests. 4-day week certainly sounds good. We are headed into the weekend. It's going to be a big weekend. We've got lots to talk about today here on the show. If you're paying more than $200 for a round trip airfare out of Chicago to a lot of good places, you're probably paying too much. Chicago still has the lowest airfares in the country. We're going to be talking with Rick Senior a little later in the program. And Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management's here, ready to talk over some of the week's big economic news and help us make sure our portfolio is good. We'll do that all after the WGN Market Desk this morning, sponsored by Power Service Products. First, we'll start here in this country. The stock futures, Dow futures this morning are a little bit lower. Dow futures off 34 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures lower as well. In Asia overnight, stocks generally mixed. The Nikkei up, the Hang Seng up, everything else down. In Europe, all of the arrows pointing down there. Wondering if the situation in Europe has anything to do with yesterday's decision by the European group there, the ECB. The ECB looking at options to drive QE, that quantitative easing, forward. Yesterday, the head of this group, Mario Draghi, had a news conference. He was asking, answering questions about his decision to leave interest rates there alone on hold. And this is what he was telling reporters, trying to calm the markets and calm investors.
And we discussed the assessment of the economy and we discussed the broad macroeconomic projections, but we didn't discuss anything else.
Mm-hmm. And he went on to say,
as I said before, countries that have fiscal space should use it. Germany has fiscal space.
He was referring there, of course, to Germany, the biggest economy in Europe so far. And this is obviously causing problems with the markets in Europe, probably why they're lower. U.S. stocks have sort of been tepid this week as well, waiting on the Federal Reserve. We saw the beige book earlier this week. We'll talk with Paul about that, too. But there's still some concern and question about whether or not the Fed will move forward with interest rates. So yesterday, markets moved modestly to the downside. Apple shares falling a day after the iPhone and Apple Watch. But after looking at some of the history, even back to Steve Jobs, on the day of the big announcements for Apple back then, even back then, Apple stock always fell on those days. The news not impressive for Russell Investments' Stephen Wood, who's watching energy shares very closely.
So we don't think it's a recession in the U.S. Things don't look terrible, but valuations are getting kind of stretched. And throughout the first, second, and into this quarter, inching upwards. So we're just thinking from a U.S. perspective, time to maybe sell into the rallies, pull back a little bit of that exposure.
So that's Stephen Wood of Russell Investments. Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management is the guy I trust. He's here listening to Russell. So does Russell have a point?
He does. And it is a contention that we've made for much of this year. Part of the reason why the markets have really struggled to make headway. Certainly, the markets have been sideways now for the last 6 weeks or so within about a 1-1.5% trading range. And some of it is anticipation, waiting for better economic data, better earnings numbers from corporations. that so far we haven't seen. And part of the reason why I think the markets were a little disappointed yesterday with Mario Draghi's comments that we're going to kind of hold off and wait a while. But I think, too, that will be the Fed's message later this month.
What do, if you could translate for us when he says valuations are getting kind of stretched?
It's very technical. What he's talking about is the earnings on the S&P 500 and what are investors paying for those earnings. And on average, you're looking at about 15 to 16, maybe 17 times those earnings. Right now, the market is, based on the last 12 months' worth of earnings, it's selling at about 21 to 22 times those earnings. So it is on the historical high side. And so if you say, well, what is it going to take us to get back to average, assuming some earnings growth over the next couple years, you're probably looking at a 15 to 20% decline in the market to get us to average. So, yeah, we can be above average for a while, and I think part of the reason that we're up here and have been here for a while is because there's really no alternative to the stock market. Interest rates are zero.
Right. The S&P is at, finished at 2181 yesterday, the NASDAQ at 5259. Those are not bad numbers.
No, and they're very close to historical highs. I mean, we put a new high in the NASDAQ earlier this week. The S&P has been trading very, very close to that. So, again, the markets are, I think, reacting, and investors are reacting and continue to favor stocks over bonds because we're getting very little in the way of revenue and earnings and growth from the bond market.
I have to tell you, I went to the thesaurus yesterday to try to find different words for tepid because the markets really haven't been going one way or the other, and I'm running out of words.
Yeah, it's been excitingly sideways.
Sideways, I like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. And that, I think the markets are, again, what we've heard from Fed comments over the last few weeks indicate that the Fed is ready to raise rates. And as we've talked about before, they may be just throwing out those trial balloons to see how the markets react. So when they do push the button, the markets are ready for it.
Well, Janet Yellen's looking at me kind of funny this morning from one of these financial websites, like she's got something up her sleeve. We'll talk more a little bit about that as we continue our Friday conversation with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. U.S. investors stepped back yesterday, the Dow Jones losing 46 points to close at 18,479. The S&P 500 index slid nearly 5 points at a sell-off in tech stocks weighed on the NASDAQ composite. It fell 24.5 points. More light may be shed on the outlook for U.S. interest rates when regional Fed chiefs for Boston and Dallas speak today. European finance ministers and central bank governors will meet in Slovakia. Samsung's latest phone is now considered a flight risk. The FAA has advised passengers not to turn on or to charge the Galaxy Note 7 smartphone while on board an aircraft and not to put them in checked baggage. The phone's lithium-ion batteries have burst into flames on some phones. And it'll cost Ford $640 million to replace door latches on nearly 2.5 million cars, trucks, and vans because they can pop open while the vehicles are moving. The automaker's adding 1.5 million vehicles to the recall list. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. It's 522. Welcome back to the program. While most of you were probably out enjoying the week, I was reading the Beige Book. Earlier this week, it's the monthly report. Not month. Is it monthly, Paul?
No, it is a quarterly report.
It's the report from the Federal Reserve kind of puts out this little thing, and they kind of give you a sense of what they're thinking, and they look at all the different districts of the country where they have Federal Reserve offices. And instead of asking you about interest rates this morning, I want to talk about Chicago. Because the growth in this 7th district is where we are, actually picked up. It was a moderate pace in July and August. Things seem to be going well in the Midwest.
It is. And when you take a look at, again, the country as a whole, the northern part of the United States, us, Michigan, Ohio, et cetera, has always been known as the Rust Belt, certainly where a lot of manufacturing has historically occurred. And that has changed a lot over the last 40 or 50 years to where we are now, a little bit more of a service economy. And certainly Chicago has a very large tourism trade as well. And that part of the economy has actually done reasonably well coming out of the recession and into the recovery. So we're seeing it in a lot of the other data sets that come out of Chicago. They have a variety of things that are put out by the Chicago Federal Reserve that indicate the Midwest is doing okay. One blotch on that, if you will, is the fact that housing prices in the area are still relatively flat. We really haven't seen the housing pop that we've seen on the coasts, and that's been disappointing, at least for many homeowners.
The only positive point there is that it seems sale prices, home sales, have picked up. And that's good, but whether the people are getting their asking price is another question.
Yeah, so when you're looking at year-over-year numbers for housing prices, you're seeing 2%, maybe 3% growth, where you look out at Denver and California and you're seeing double-digit year-over-year growth. So there is a difference.
There were some areas of the country that didn't do so well, but the one other bright spot here in the Midwest is the Fed says growth in business spending picked up, which seems to be good. Right.
It is good. And again, when you take a look at it region by region, you'll be able to pick out some of those things. But when you look at it again from a country as a whole, business spending is moderately higher. But a lot of the added monies that are coming into businesses are getting spent on stock buybacks and internal stuff as opposed to making more stuff.
And here's something that we're going to talk with Orion a little bit about later on, Orion Samuelson, later in the show. But there are low expectations for farm incomes. There's a lot of concern among farmers. Even though crops are doing well, it seems like there's going to be a bumper crop this year. Even the Purdue Ag Barometer is low. Farmers are just not positive about where things are, where things are going.
No, that's true. And that's a function of, again, you're right. They've got a bumper crop. They're doing they're producing a huge quantity of grains, et cetera. But the flip side of that is because they have so much in production, prices are down.
Yeah.
So when you take a look at the farmers and you take a look at their net income, it's not as good because prices are down.
So let's talk about Janet looking at me kind of weird from the page on the website. Does she have something up her sleeve? Is September the month, or is it going to be next year, December?
You know, it could be very well any of the above. And as we've talked about for a long time, it depends. We're all so data dependent. So each of these little snippets of information we're trying to read third, fourth level to try to determine what the Fed's going to do. A lot of the Fed governors have been out talking about raising rates. It's time to raise rates. And certainly I think that they can go in September, whether they will or not ahead of the election. There's a lot of discussion. They probably won't because of the election. So the next logical increase would be in December. We'll have a few more employment reports to look at and inflation numbers. When you look at it, the employment data has been very good. What's been missing is the lack of inflation. Mm-hmm. We had that in December, but they raised rates in December. So the possibility, I think, still exists. They're certainly talking it up.
They're in our newsroom, they're doing a pool on Dancing with the Stars. I don't watch the show, so I'm not taking part. But I think I'm going to start my own Fed pool. And I think September, I think they're going to raise rates in September. I'm going to go with September.
I've over the last couple of weeks, I've become a little bit more convinced that the Fed, in listening to their conversations, they're watching the financial markets more than they are the economy. And the financial markets, every time the Fed has come out and said, yes, we're thinking about raising rates and we're ready to go and September is live in their commentary, the markets have kind of yawned. So I think they have been prepping the markets, and I think that possibility exists, although certainly with the numbers that we saw from manufacturing and service data that came out last week, the percentage or the odds of them raising rates have come down significantly. But I think it's still a good opportunity.
Because overall, the markets are resilient, and that's how I kind of want to close the show. We have just a little bit of time left, but 9/11, the anniversary, 15th anniversary, is this weekend, and we remember that day. The markets closed for almost a week. More than that, they bounced back. They're very resilient.
They are. When you took a look at the economics around it, we were already declining coming into that, coming off of the tech bubble. And when the markets first opened, it was heavy selling because everybody that was on, you know, had money in the market, weren't sure what was going to happen, pulled out. So we had a lot of selling immediately after the markets opened up. 3-4 months later, the markets were higher than they were before 9/11. So again, those types of incidences are not necessarily economic altering, and that's really more the key. It's certainly devastating, but did not alter the overall economy of the U.S., and that's really what the market's key off of.
Paul Nolte, Kingsview Asset Management. Head over to their website here in Chicago. You can get his Nolte notes. And, Paul, we'll talk to you again next Friday.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Have a great weekend.
From ABC News Tech Trends, I'm Alex Stone. Just in time for the big shopping season, Sony unveiling kind of new but kind of not consoles. The PlayStation 4 hasn't been on the market long enough for a complete redesign yet, only since 2013, but Sony is trying a sort of mid-cycle reboot to keep up with demand for high resolution.
The new model, which is the standard PS4 moving forward, will appeal to a wider audience.
That's Sony's Andrew House unveiling the new PS4. The original model is getting smaller, thinner, and more energy efficient, starting at $299. The new PS4 Pro, for $100 more, will be souped up with more power and will be 4K capable. At the Tech Blog and Gadget, Editor-in-Chief Michael Gorman says more of us are getting 4K TVs, but right now, not enough of us own them for everybody to run out and buy the PS4 Pro.
It's a niche market, just because not enough people have a TV that can take advantage of it.
With Tech Trends, I'm Alex Stone, ABC News.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It is 5:40. Delta Airlines yesterday announced that the final total, the final bill for its last outage is now $150 million. And that covers everything from loss to time to employees being stuck in places they weren't supposed to be to your tickets being refunded. $150 million. And guess what happened this week? If you had any luck to be on British Airways, they also had a computer outage this week. Seems like it is becoming a weekly occurrence. Let's bring in Rick Seeney, who's the CEO of faircompare.com out of Dallas. He's with us from there this morning. Faircompare.com monitors all kinds of airline activity, and Rick is our resident expert on this. Rick, British Airways down again. As I mentioned, this seems to be becoming a regular thing.
Yeah, it's almost like a virus that keeps jumping from airline to airline. Apparently, it jumps over the Atlantic as well, over to British Airways. You know, consumers expect a lot better out of these airlines. They probably would give them a pass if they weren't making billions of dollars in profit. But since they are, I don't think consumers are too happy with giving them a pass on some of these glitches that they've been having over the last, really, last 18 months or so. There's been multiple airlines that have had issues. It seems to be the pace of that seems to be quickening here the last few weeks.
The reporter in me is suspicious and wonders, is something more going on here? Are they being hacked and they're just not telling us?
Well, I think there's certainly something more going on that they're not telling us. I'm not sure if it's actually external hackers. I think a lot of it has to do with time. As time moves on, infrastructure changes. It's not any different than a crumbling bridge. You have to, your IT infrastructure has to be always being updated. The people trying to get in, or even people within your company that try to do harm in some cases, you have to protect within and without, and you have to keep doing it month after month. I mean, I'm surprised these airlines don't even, every month, they basically should kick the cord out of the wall and make sure all their backup systems work correctly. If they're not doing that, they're not spending enough money on it.
Because the cost of this, there's two different costs. One is the actual money cost. We're learning now the thing at Delta cost about $100 million. And then the cost of losing, you know, potential customers. Those are big issues.
Oh, not only losing customers, that's certainly a big issue, but also the economic cost. These people are traveling, many of them business travelers, from point A to B doing business transactions. Who knows what delays or causes delay and how much money that causes as well. So it's essentially a lifeblood service. It's like having your trash picked up. Flights are, if you're a mayor of a city and you don't pick up the trash and fill up potholes, you're in big trouble. It's the same thing with airlines. If your system doesn't work correctly, and by the way, it's not easy for airlines. What happens if Apple has a glitch and you can't get your boarding pass on your phone? So it's not only internally, externally, it also has to be all their partners as well that they partnered up with.
And then the handling of this situation when this does happen, when this first happened, I immediately went online to see what I can find out. You search forever to find anything from the airline, nothing on their Twitter feed. Then you see they're responding to people. But the first indication that something's going wrong, you see customers complaining. That should change, shouldn't it?
I agree with you 100%. I think the most thing that customers want in these situations, they can almost live with the fact that something goes wrong. They just don't want to be led on and say, oh, well, we'll fix it in 15 minutes. Oh, no, it'll be another 30 minutes. Oh, no, it'll be another hour. And meanwhile, they're just stewing and boiling. They need to know the real information that's coming out. If you're having trouble, you know it's going to take 3 or 4 hours. Don't tell people it's going to be every 30 minutes. Check back with us.
Well, let's do a postmortem on the summer travel season. It started pretty rough with TSA. Things improved over the summer. How would you grade the summer travel?
I give them a B+ or an A. I mean, it's amazing what happens when you have a problem and the people that cause a problem at the top are chopped out of the equation. When the people that are involved in it, when it's a group effort, which includes TSA, the airlines, and the airports pull together, they got some more people trained. They actually put some people out front to help outside of security on the way in. And now you got, you know, the entire nation under 10 minutes. That's pretty good. It took them only about a month and a half to get to that. Too bad, you know, after 15 years, they hadn't sorted that out.
And how would you rate the season in terms of travel? Was it a bigger travel season than past summers?
I think it was down just slightly from the summer before. You can tell that because pricing was a little bit down. That means demand was a little bit weaker. We'll get the data from the Department of Transportation in a few months to see how much it was actually down. But certainly it was down a little bit. Prices were down. But, you know, when it's down, it's sort of relative, right? Every year they're trying to grow 1%, 2%, 3%. So if they only grow 2% and last year they grew 3%, it's down slightly, even though it did grow slightly.
There's an indication, too, that the airports, people at the airports are a little jumpy. We've had two incidents now where there's been loud noises and caused mass evacuations. That's an issue, right?
No, there's no doubt. I mean, there's so many things that can go wrong. You have drones at airports. You have loud noises. And I don't blame people for being a little bit jumpy. I mean, all you have to do is look at the news each week, and and your head should be on a swivel. And by the way, TSA wants your head on a swivel. So, you know, again, they have to be the one that triages it. If somebody has an issue, they hear a loud noise, it's all about you telling TSA or the people around it and letting them decide how important the issue is and whether or not evacuation should occur or not.
As we move up on the anniversary of 9/11, it bears probably repeating for those who may not have been alive at the time that there's a reason people are jumping.
Oh, there's no. Wow. I mean, even if I remember 9/11 very, very vividly. And so, but even the last several months, I mean, all the way back to November when we had all sorts of crazy terrorist events, and we still get people that get through security with things that they shouldn't get through. And, you know, all it takes is one, and TSA has a tough job, 2 million people a day flying. All it takes is one, you know, 2 million times 365 days is a lot of people to screen and make sure nothing gets through.
We have some who've complained that we've not learned all of the lessons from 9/11. Would you agree with those people?
I think to some degree. The problem is complacency, right? It's sort of like if nothing major happens today, every day that happens after that, there nothing major happens, you get more complacent. And the question is, how do you prevent yourself from getting complacent? I know in TSA, they're trying to get new gizmos, new screening gizmos. You know, it's going to check for your shoes, for example. They're going to get you through TSA pre-check so that you actually have filled out a form so you're pre-vetted. So you have to keep things cooking and going so that you don't get complacent. And I think that's the toughest part of the job.
So get us out of town. Where can we go for cheap?
Well, you know, if you're wanting to head out right now from Chicago, we can sort of span the United States. If you're going to the Northwest, you got Seattle and Portland under $160 round trip. The West Coast, San Francisco, L.A., San Diego, also under $160 round trip. Some of these crazy prices that you see in here for Frontier and Spirit Airlines are even under $80 round trip. South Florida, under $200. You have the East Coast, New York, Washington, Boston, all under $160. So essentially, during the month of September, the entire month of October, first 3 weeks of November, the first 2 weeks in December, if you're paying over $200, you're paying too much for your ticket. And really, honestly, in some cases, if you're paying over $150 round trip, you're paying too much.
And if you haven't paid for or bought your Thanksgiving travel tickets, you're probably out of luck.
No, you're not out of luck, but you're every day. Here's sort of a simple rule of thumb. Add about a dollar to your virtual airline ticket up until the middle of September, then start adding $2 to your virtual airline ticket up until Halloween, and then $4 after that. If you start to do the math, it's over $100 in procrastination fees. So basically, you need to get out there and shop and don't procrastinate, especially if you're leaving the Wednesday before the busiest day and the Sunday after the second busiest day and the most expensive. If you're trying to find a good deal, the best under 2 hour, if your trip's under 2 hours, which, you know, out of Chicago's not quite half of the United States, is that Thursday morning, and returning Saturday or the Monday after. Those are your best bets.
All right. Happy trails. Safe travels, Rick.
Hey, thanks, Steve.
That is Rick Cini from Dallas this morning of faircompare.com. You can follow him at Rick Cini and at faircompare. And faircompare.com. It's 5:48 on the opening bell. Just before we check traffic, we want to update you on a developing story happening in Spain. You've heard on the news there has been a passenger train derailment in Spain's northwest Galicia region. The Associated Press now says 4 people have been killed. At least 47 others are hurt. We're seeing the first video come in from the scene, a very bad scene. Lots of people critically hurt. We'll continue to monitor that story here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:52 on the WGN market desk this morning. Dow futures is still pointing down 53 points now. The NASDAQ S&P futures are lower as well. Looks like we're heading toward a lower opening when the bell rings later this morning. Let's get the latest on commodities and agriculture now. And Orion Samuelson's with us. Good morning, Orion.
Well, good morning, Steve. Better make plans this weekend ahead to the Sandwich Fair in Sandwich, Illinois. It's a great one again this year. We spent yesterday there, and a little bit of rain that dampened the grounds early in the morning, but turned out to be nice. And I do have to report the results of the beef recipe cook-off, because Paul Drendel with the Cattlemen and yours truly served as judges for that. So I have the recipes, Steve. If you want to get them later, I'll send them on to you.
But first, if you ever need somebody to fill in for you at one of these judging things, just holler, okay?
I will do that. There were a lot of good entries. First place, Donna Van Evercoren of Aurora with her crock pot shredded beef sandwiches. Second place, Tony Martin of DeKalb with her Swedish meatballs. And I have to tell you, tough for a Norwegian like me to vote for Swedish meatballs, but boy, they were good.
Oh,
and third
boy.
Place was Gail Wiley of Compton with her Guinness beef stew, and you know what the Guinness part of that was. So it was a good contest, a lot of good entries, and we enjoyed that very much. As we talk about markets, though, it's amazing how quickly the color of the crops is changing, because soybean fields are now turning from green to yellow as the soybean crop ripens and gets ready for harvest. We're beginning to see a change in color in the corn crop as well. And I note this morning that we've just got fractional changes in the overnight trading at the board, with wheat and corn down just slightly and soybeans trading higher. And then the other event this weekend is Salute to Agriculture Day at the University of Illinois. That's an all-day event tomorrow. And we'll be flying Air Orion down to Champaign, and that will give us a look at the changing field colors from the sky. But with a night game this year, normally it's an 11 a.m. game, but it's 6:30 North Carolina, Illinois. Our tailgate with the auction of some of the champion meat cuts will take place at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. At noontime, we'll be emceeing a luncheon for the University College of Agriculture, College of ACES, we call it, the College Connection. So we've got a busy weekend ahead.
I worked and lived in Champaign for 4 years early in my career, and they had this at the U of I Ag area, the stomach, the cow stomach that you could actually see. It was you could
yes.
see. Do they still have that?
I haven't checked on it lately, because it was quite revolutionary when they did it, because, yeah, there was a window into her stomach, and you could watch the feed being digested.
Yeah. And it's always interesting when you go to Champaign that here you have this sort of, you know, city-like area, and then right there in the middle there's this farm area. It's a wonderful mix of both, and it is really nice to see those together.
It is, and they do a good job at the University of Illinois. That's why today we again will be honoring Gloria, and I are fortunate enough to have a scholarship fund for the College of Aces at the University of Illinois. And so tomorrow at that event at the tailgate, we're presenting $1,500 scholarships to 10 students at the university, and I'm looking forward to meeting them tomorrow afternoon.
ILL.
Yes.
I
and I.
Wonderful. We'll have a safe trip for you and have a great weekend.
You too.